35. Ronan had meant to dream Matthew. It had been Christmas time. Short days, long nights. He always got restless that time of year. Anticipation built in him as the days got smaller. Until around the end of December, the feeling eventually burst and left him feeling more ordinary again. He knew now that it had been a surge of the ley line. But back then, as a child, as a dreamer who was not permitted to give words to the dreaming, he hadn't known anything but that restlessness. It was a feeling that was only shored up by Declan's behavior. If Ronan became more alive as they crept toward winter solstice, Declan became less so. His eyes developed bags. His moods got short. The brothers did not fight then like they did when they were older, but the seeds were already sleeping in the cold soil. That particular winter had been unseasonably warm, and a few days before Christmas, Aurora sent the boys outside to kick a ball around. To Ronan's delight, the brothers discovered that the dun-colored fields around the farmhouse were lousy with starlings. Hundreds, perhaps thousands. When the birds first saw the brothers emerge from the house, they lifted up in a great swath of dark dots in the sky, like music notes on a page. But they quickly landed again just a few yards farther away. This was much better than kickball. For quite a while, they instead played a game of who can get closer to the flock. Ronan won. This was partially because he was shorter than Declan and thus more clandestine, but it was also because he wanted it more. He was fascinated by this flock of flyers, this many-headed entity that was not tied to the ground. The birds were individuals, but when they lifted off, it was together in something even more magnificent than they could ever be on their own. Ronan didn't have words for how they made him feel, but he loved them. He wished he knew how to explain it to Declan. "I'd like a bird army," he said. Declan's lip curled.
"I don't think that would be very interesting."
"You're never into anything. You're the most boring person I know." Declan retrieved the ball. The game was clearly over. Without warning, Ronan ran directly into the flock. There was a brief moment of stillness, and then they all took off at once, surrounding him. It was so much like a dream. Wings upon wings upon wings. Too many birds to count. Too many voices to pick out individual sounds. He raised his arms. Ground and air seethed with birds, hiding both so thoroughly that it didn't seem entirely impossible that he had left the ground with them. "Imagine flying," he thought. "Imagine flying while awake. Imagine dreaming while awake." Then the birds had gone, and he was just a boy standing on the ground. He was not flying. Being awake was nothing like dreaming. His older brother was a few feet away, the ball tucked under his arm, looking at him with an expression of vague irritation. Ronan had never known such agony, and he didn't even have words for it. A few nights later, on the shortest night of the year, Ronan dreamt of the birds, only now they were ravens, not starlings, and there were fewer of them. They were gathered in the field in a purposeful way, studying something in the grass. They were muttering to themselves, "Make way, make way. Make way." When Ronan approached to investigate, they scattered. In the grass where they'd been, he found a blonde-headed baby. In the dream, Ronan knew without being told that this was a new brother. The baby smiled at Ronan. His hands were already outstretched for Ronan to pick him up. He was so, so happy to see him. "Hello," he told the baby. The baby laughed. Ronan laughed, too, and the awful feeling that had been inside him since that game of kickball dissipated. He scooped his new brother out of the grass, and then he woke up. When he did, Matthew Lynch was still there, squalling and brand new, in the hallway outside his closed bedroom door. But the thing was, Ronan hadn't known. He hadn't known Matthew was dreamt, that Matthew was his dream. He couldn't remember how he'd explained it to himself at the time, but it must have been good and thorough because all he remembered of that time was his delight at having a new baby brother. He hadn't remembered the circumstances around it until Declan had cornered him during a particularly destructive time in high school and given him the story. Neo Lynch had given Ronan stories too, but they were always rewards. This was a punishment, a warning. "You dreamt Matthew," Declan said. "Don't you get it? If you get yourself killed, you're ending his life too." "I don't think I did," Ronan said, but he knew he had. He'd just been pushing a memory away as hard as he could. It had been made easier by the fact that Matthew hadn't appeared right next to Ronan when he woke. Instead, like Ronan's dreamt forest, he'd appeared some distance away. It had also been made easier because Ronan didn't have words back then to talk about what had happened. He wasn't allowed to. "I was there," Declan said. "I know what happened. Saying it didn't happen doesn't make it real. You've got to keep this under control. His life relies on you." Ronan had lived with that weight since then. No more, he thought now. The ley lines would be powerful again. Matthew would have a life of his own.
"This will have to do," Bride said. They'd been charging away from Boston for a few hours when Bride pulled over abruptly. There was nothing remarkable about the stopping place. It was simply a one-track gravel road that led into a wooded picnic area with a rotting bench. Ronan stared around at their surroundings again, trying to decide if, in his misery over Declan, Adam, and Hennessy, he had badly misjudged how far they'd traveled. He could see a lake glistening through the dense trees. Everything continued to look very New England to him. "We're still in Massachusetts, aren't we?"
"Connecticut," Bride said. "But yes, you're right. But something is happening. We need to free Illidoran's line now, or we might not be able to. That's what the trees are telling me. This is the best place I've felt so far for the energy. I'd like more, but I don't think we can wait any longer to dream something for the dam. We won't make it all the way there."
"Before what?" Ronan asked,
but Bride just threw open the car door. Crisp, cool air flooded in. It was a lovely day. It was the sort of day that caused people to put coats on dogs and take long scenic walks. It was the sort of day it had been when Ronan had last visited Adam at Harvard. It was the sort of day that Ronan would have used to repair fences and siding if he had been back at the barns. It was also the sort of day for Ronan and Bride to sit in the dried leaves behind the car, leaning up against it, unfolding their dream masks. Chainsaw flapped up to a tree above them and waited.
"What do you feel?" Bride asked.
"Strange. Felt strange to do this without Hennessy. After this, Ronan vowed, he'd go back for her. He'd fix this, he'd fix her." But that wasn't the kind of feeling Bride meant. Ronan put his hands onto the ground to feel the ley line, but that made him think too much about how Adam sometimes did that when he was scrying. He draped him over his knees instead as he listened. The ley line was there, not overwhelming, but present, sufficient. He could feel its low, slow pulse trying to sync with his heartbeat, or vice versa. "It's all right. I've never been to the dam. How are we supposed to know how to destroy it?"
"I know what it's like. I'll show you in the dream."
"And you want us to dream something here to destroy it way down there?" But Ronan answered his own question. "It has to be something that can travel."
"Yes," Bride agreed. "Like the dolphins for the transmission line. Like the sun dogs you sent to save your brothers."
His voice had no bitterness. Declan had tried to get them killed, but he didn't spit the word brothers at Ronan. Instead, his voice, if anything, became softer on that word. Soft on brothers, hard on sundogs. The entire sundogs episode felt like a very long time ago. Ronan and Hennessy had been in Lindenmere. Ronan stripped Forrest, trying to banish the lace from Hennessy's mind with the help of Bride, who had been just a voice to them at that point. Bride had disappeared in a hurry as the moderators began to move in on other dreamers, and Ronan had received that fraught call from Declan that Matthew was in danger. Ronan still remembered the absolute terror he'd felt as he begged his Forrest to use the power of the ley line to produce the sundogs. He remembered how he'd sped across the state toward Declan and Matthew, the exact opposite of what he was doing now. And he remembered clearly arriving to find his dreamt sundogs had done what he'd asked, saved his brothers' lives. The exact opposite of what Declan had just tried to do. Declan hadn't been so worried about Ronan's ability when Ronan was hidden safely away until needed. Bride said, "We don't have much time." Ronan didn't know if he could stay focused with his thoughts as they were now. He wasn't thinking about the future. He was thinking about the past. Bride said, "I'll do my best to focus the dream. It will be different after this. Last push." They dreamt. In the dream, they were at the dam. Because it was Bride's dream, it was vividly rendered. Ronan could see it. Smell it, feel the unseasonably warm breeze on his skin. They were walking. He could feel it as if he were awake. The bite of his boots on the zigzagging walkway the two of them followed. The echo of their steps off the back of the low concrete visitor's center which they passed. The tickle of gnats swarming from the overgrown dry brush. The buzz of a stink bug woken by the heat. Ronan would have been hard-pressed to identify how it was any different from waking life. "What do you feel?" Bride asked. "Don't ask me that while we're dreaming," Ronan said. "It fucks me up." They had come to a viewing area at the end of the walkway. Wordlessly, they leaned on the railing to look at the vast white dam. The scale of it was difficult to hold. On one side was the glittering blue water of the artificial lake, and on the other, hundreds of feet below, held back by the curved dam, was more glittering water, the choked Roanoke River. All about were mountains. The lake looked odd somehow, the water strange as it climbed the slopes, although Ronan couldn't understand why. "They're drowned," Bride said. "These mountains were never meant to have water up to their chins. Picture this as a river valley instead. The dam did this. There are towns beneath that lake, if you can imagine. Beautiful, isn't it? Like a cemetery. How would you destroy it?" For quite a long time, the two of them stood there as Ronan studied the dam and thought of what the smallest, easiest dream would be to destroy it. Before he'd fallen asleep, he'd been imagining something strong enough to bust through the dam itself, but that now seemed unacceptable. This was more water than he had pictured. All of these gallons would have to go somewhere, and who knew how many houses and roads had been built downstream of this now. He didn't want to kill anyone, so it would have to be something gradual, something with a bit of a warning. Not a lot, just enough to let people get out of the way. Not slow enough for them to stop it. Inexorable. Unfixable. His heart was beating hard in his chest. Just a few days ago, he'd been contemplating how he felt about destroying a trash dump, and here he was figuring out how to take down a project that surely had cost billions of dollars and taken years to build. The electricity it generated was used to power all the vacation homes he could see dotting the mountains. Probably. Ronan didn't know a lot about how electricity worked. He thought about how wonderful it was to dream in Lindenmere, where the ley line was good, where Lindenmere was focusing him, where everything was as he liked it. He imagined what it would be like to make that even better. He thought about the little Aldana Leon dreamers, He thought about Rhiannon Martin's mirrors. He thought about Matthew. He thought about himself, what it would be like to live without fearing he would manifest rooms of murder crabs or bleed to death from nightwash. He also thought about how Declan was worried that this was something he couldn't come back from.
It is frightening how fast the world sickens, Bride said. Decades ago it seemed like we had years. Years ago it seemed like we had months. Months ago it seemed like days. And now every day, every minute, every second, it is harder to be a dreamer. It's so noisy. Even here in the mountains, it is so noisy. How they shout at us all, even in our sleep. Soon there will be no place for the quiet things. The things that undo themselves when they have to shout. Soon there will be no place for secrets. The secrets that lose their mystery when they are uncovered. Soon there will be no place for the strange. No place for the unknown. Because everything will be cataloged and paved and plugged in. Ronan thought about Adam's glove set upon his shoes in the mudroom. He thought about wanting to feel like he had been made for something more than dying. I know you are two things, Bride said. I know you are of both worlds. That will never change.
What if it's too much? Ronan asked. I don't know if I want to do it.
You do.
You can't just say I do. You don't know what I'm feeling. Bride's voice was very, very soft.
I know. You've already made this decision. You made it long ago.
On a hoverboard floating in the air? After Rhiannon Martin was killed?
Further back than that.
When we decided to go with you?
Further back than that.
No, said Ronan.
Yes.
All of Ronan's frustration burst out of him so strongly that the dream shivered with it. The air shimmered. The lake simmered. He was tired of the lessons, the games, the riddles. For some reason, he suddenly remembered the long-ago Christmas starlings bursting around him as Declan watched. That agony again of wanting to fly and being unable to explain it to anyone else. He was suddenly either very afraid or very furious. He snarled, "You can't know when I made the decision."
"I can," Bride said softly. "Because I know when you dreamt me."